The film begins with a guy expressing in language we can't use on the radio, expressing his incredulity at finding himself in the army in Iraq. Did you find yourself in a similar situation?
Yeah, I did. I never imagined that I would be in a war zone. I mean, ever. It never occurred to me. And I think it was after the invasion of Iraq, both Garrett and I were wondering what the hell was going on. In a sense, the world seemed more a different place after the invasion of Iraq than it did after September 11th. That was something both Garrett and I felt. And so there was a sense of what the hell is going on. And at the same time, knowing that there was this embedding program in place allowed for kind of access. So because it became a possibility to go, somehow it followed that we went. And there was all these little decisions that got us there, and none of them were sort of grand ones in a way. So it was all, by the time I got there, it was a surprise. And it was sort of looking around and wondering, what had I gotten myself into?
Describe the process of how you ended up in Fallujah with the 82nd.
Yeah, Garrett and Christian Parenti had gone in August of 2003 to research the project and see if it was possible to embed, and ended up in a much safer sector of Baghdad with a group of National Guardsmen. And the story was going to be about their experience and having left jobs behind and this a very different kind of piece. But when we went back there, we were kicked out, I think, within about 30 seconds. And so we're without a project. And it was just by chance that we ended up in Fallujah because Christian had a short embed scheduled there. So we ended up there by chance, were there for 3 days, asked to stay longer. And at that point, Fallujah was not on the map here in the States. It was in Iraq. It was known as one of maybe three of the hottest spots there, but it wasn't yet here on all the TV maps that it became later.
And how receptive was the 82nd Airborne, which is a pretty elite unit? How receptive were they to the idea of some filmmakers coming in and interrupting their lives?
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, a lot of them said, well, they had no choice in a certain way because they're always assigned journalists. So it's part of their routine about having to take in journalists, although they hadn't had any documentary filmmakers before. They had only journalists who were there, either TV people or print journalists who were there for 3 days, maybe a week, and they knew whatever they said would be immediately in print or on TV. So, of course, they were very closed and shut down. But when we came in, there was a sense, well, we told them right away that anything they said wouldn't be broadcast for at least a year. So immediately the people that knew they were getting out felt they could speak more openly. And plus, because of the time we had, we didn't have to ask these pointed questions up front. Like, you heard journalists go in and say, well, how does it feel to kill somebody, And we would never ask those kinds of questions. And if we asked a question and people were resistant, we could sit with them for a week and just watch TV and not have to go to that subject again. And because we had that time, I think we were able to get a whole other layer of access to the soldiers.
Describe your day-to-day life. How long were you there? And what did you do, get up and immediately start shooting? How did it work?
Yeah, I mean, we were there for 6 weeks with them, and it was strange. It was sort of a slow pace because you would get up, and we couldn't shoot all day long because we lived with them, and the number of hours of tape that would be astronomical. So it would be a thing where we'd get up, we'd maybe do an interview or two, we'd hang out in the room with the guys and shoot random footage, and then it was mostly then focused around the missions that they would go on. Every 3 days they would go on a mission, and then we'd try to roll as much tape as we could. But it was hard because the first 2 weeks we felt like we were missing 80% of what was good, because as soon as you turned the camera off, something would happen. But there was no sense of how to guess when that was going to happen. And so we tried to shoot as much as we could, but we couldn't just constantly shoot. So it was definitely a learning process about when to guess when something would happen, because that was all you could do in a certain way.
Now, this question always comes up when we're dealing with cinema verite or documentaries or reality TV. How much did the camera change the situation?
That's something that we thought a lot about. And, in fact, in the original cut of the movie, we had a whole scene that was about soldiers' awareness of media, because we felt we were getting only half answers from people and the walls were up constantly. And we wanted to sort of create a scene to put that in context and sort of make us aware that we weren't seeing the whole picture. And yet over time, because we spent so much time and we got so many candid moments, we ended up cutting out that scene. And in terms of how it actually affected the soldiers' behavior, it's hard to say, because you could always see people performing for a while. But people can't constantly perform for the camera. Or you could see people's walls, maintain their walls, but people can't maintain those walls forever.
And you were there a fairly long time, so was there an evolution in the way they reacted?
There was, but it wasn't as linear as I might think. It wasn't as if over time, the walls came down a little bit. It was, yes, there was that kind of progression, but there was also a sense that sometimes, for instance, after something would happen out in the field, like a bomb would go off, and you'd come back and the walls would be totally down, and there'd be this kind of intimacy and this access to a deeper level of these guys. And then maybe a week later, they would become self-conscious about that, and the walls would go back up, and then the next day they'd come down. So it was this up and down negotiating thing that never had a clear movement. Although, I mean, by the end, it was probably the last night or so, there was definitely a couple of conversations that were the most frank, because they knew we were leaving, I think.
Unlike a lot of documentaries, there's no narrator. No, right. As some people say, the voice of God is not there. And not only that, but you're not spoon-feeding things to people. You're asking the viewer to make a lot of his or her own judgments. Right. How did you decide on that? Are you pleased with what came out?
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky because Garrett and I always knew we would never use voiceover. It wasn't in the last film we did. And we spoke a lot about films of Frederick Wiseman before we went as a kind of model, and not in a pure cinema verite sense, because, you know, he uses no interviews. We always knew there'd be interviews, but we wanted that kind of immediacy of the experience, and we didn't want to mediate it with a voiceover. So that did pose problems, because there is moments that with one line of voiceover you could clarify something about the nature of a meeting, of what the mission was in town, or these kinds of things. So in some ways it made the editing process more difficult and tedious, but it lends, I think, a kind of immediacy to the experience of watching it, and demands more attention from an audience, and is a very conscious choice about how you deal with meaning. And so, I mean, we were both very, very pleased with how it ended up, and wouldn't have it any other way. But it does make some people uncomfortable, because they feel they want to be situated in a clearer sense. They want to know, what do the filmmakers think? Am I seeing this mission? When I see these guys go through this door, what am I supposed to think? Am I supposed to be aligned with these guys and know that, oh, it's just a very hard job? Or am I supposed to be horrified? And what we consciously did in the editing process was, how do you align people with the soldiers and get to know them? And then you pull the rug out from underneath them, the viewer, that is, by getting to know somebody, getting sort of appreciate where they're coming from in a way, and then see them do horrible things. And how does a viewer then negotiate that without the help of some voiceover to situate them? And I think it's uncomfortable for people intentionally.
As you're editing it, did you have a story in mind? I mean, you, when you're editing something, you make a lot of choices, what to include, what to exclude, how to sequence things, nothing is ever perfectly unfiltered. So did you have a story you were trying to tell in mind subtly, implicitly? Even if it wasn't made explicit by a narrator?
Yes. I mean, I think, definitely, and it is very true. There was never a sense that, oh, this is just some objective recording that we're then passing on to people, some purely, yeah, objective work. It's clearly a structured piece, and there is a story, but what the story we came to realize by looking at the footage, and it wasn't, or I should say, the structuring device in a way. What we saw when we looked at the footage over the six-week period was that there was this escalation of tension and frustration, both on the part of the soldiers and on the part of the town, that was building towards disaster in a way, towards catastrophe. So in some ways, if you see the same mission carried out over and over again with an escalation of frustration and then results in a bloody battle in Fallujah, there's a kind of narrative there that's being told that is about the progress or lack thereof and the futility of the war, I think, even if it's not some sort of heavy-handed message.
Do people perceive it as an anti-war movie, or how do people read it?
Well, I think in most of the press it's been written about that way, although people have been usually fairly good about acknowledging that it does. Some people use the term pro-soldier, anti-war, and I think that's accurate, although it sounds strange. I still haven't figured out exactly what that is, but I guess that it does do honor to the humanity of the soldiers and yet doesn't avoid politics. Because there's this idea that you could make a film, and some people have tried, that somehow is apolitical or something, but it's a very political war, and how can you make a film about it without trying to get into those kind of layer motivations?
Now, you spent a lot of time. You spent 6 weeks with these guys and got to know them reasonably well. You were under fire together, so I mentioned there was some bonding that went on. And how did it feel to go out and then see them doing terrible things, kicking people's doors down and searching their houses, arresting people, blowing people up, doing all the nasty things that soldiers do. What was that, the emotional content of that like?
It was difficult, and for all sorts of reasons, but mostly because the experience of being there is so overwhelming in a certain way that the first week I remember being overwhelmed with sort of kind of the emotional experience of it, of when I went into someone's house. And at that point, I wasn't even thinking about, well, what are the soldiers doing here? I was very conscious of what was I doing there, because I came in behind a wall of guns and started putting a camera in a woman's face. And so you realize you're adding insult to injury, and then what happens as part of the process, you start, next time you go into a house, it's easier because you justify doing it because of the film, and that becomes your job, is to make this movie, and even at the cost of humiliating people. And then I realized that that's also what the soldiers do. Several of them said the first time they went, put a bag on someone's head, they sort of wondered what it would be like in the same situation, if they were in the same situation for their family. But the next time it was easier because they felt like it was keeping them safe, and that's what they had to do. So it's a strange shutting down that I did appreciate, not appreciate, I guess, but I did understand why it occurred.
There's a lot of the soldiers' conversations in the film, but also you spent a lot of time hanging with them when the cameras weren't running. What was your impression of how thoughtful, how reflective they were, and their understanding of what they were doing?
It was mixed, because in some ways, I thought they'd be more interested in talking about that in the beginning, but it took a long time, because they mostly were interested in talking about just sort of work-related stuff, in terms of work relations, about this boss is an asshole, and these kind of sort of blue-collar concerns, I guess. But I wasn't surprised how much they had thought about why they were there, in a sense, because Garrett and I assume that these are complex human beings that have whole internal worlds. And then if you go and ask them adult questions, they would answer. They would give adult answers, and there would be a whole range about how people perceive their experience. And so I was mixed, because I was surprised to some degree one thing I was surprised about was how eloquent some people could be about their critique of the war, and yet how never interfered with them going out and doing what they did. There was a strange way that they were able to disconnect themselves from the actual job itself and still think politically it was ridiculous.
Yeah, Christian has talked about this as well, the sense that these guys feel like whatever their personal feelings, they signed a contract and they volunteered to go there, and they feel a real obligation and a professional duty. Could you talk about that?
It's funny, because in some ways this is always oversimplified. I've heard some very big war correspondents interviewed on TV, and the woman asked him, well, what are the soldiers thinking about out there? And he said, oh, all they care about is bringing their buddy home alive. You know, they don't think politics, which of course is doing them a disservice, because they do think about politics and they do think about why they're there. But at the same time, once they do leave the wire, that is, leave the base, all those things do disappear, because there's a sense of I'm here in a sense to survive my tour. I've heard that from a lot of guys. And the best way to survive my tour is to survive this mission and protect the guy next to me and watch my sector. So it becomes this very reduced, compartmentalized thing. And at the same time, as Christian talks about, there's a sense that I think there's a sense of guilt of people that might disagree with the war, but feel like they signed this paper and therefore are obligated to follow through. But I think more than that, it has to do with a practical desire to survive.
There's an amazing scene in the movie, which I think I'll run sound from, where a lieutenant, I think, is briefing the troops, and he says, basically, you're just here to guard your cells. I mean, was that a widespread sense?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tricky moment for us to put in, because he was speaking about speaking tactically about a specific operation they do, where they would go into town, and the people they were supposedly protecting didn't need protection. The only people who were targeted was them, and so, in a sense, all they were doing there was providing protection for themselves. So it becomes this strange circular logic, and realizing that what they'll be, as long as they're in Fallujah, they'll be shot at. But there's no actual progress being made. All they are is trying to stop people from shooting at them. But if they weren't there, they wouldn't be being shot at. So it is this strange circular logic that does occur, and there is all this emphasis on force protection, which is about securing the soldiers, and I think more and more, I read something about more and more percentage of resources are going towards force protection as opposed to, say, securing a town or securing work for contractors. So it is this, it's a strange circle.
It's like the catch-22 for a new millennium.
Yeah, exactly.
I have to ask this a painfully obvious question, but how did it feel to be shot at?
Well, it was strange because I remember the first time it happened, it wasn't that close, but fairly close by, and I was worried that I wasn't afraid because it was clearly some sort of defense mechanism. It wasn't some sort of bravery. It was more naivete, I think, because you feel this strange adrenaline, and I realized very quickly I didn't know how to behave in that situation. And so all I could do was look around at how soldiers were reacting. If they seemed freaked out, then I would be. If they weren't, then I assumed things were okay because I wasn't able to evaluate the danger because it happens so quickly. Things would be calm and then something would blow up or there'd be gunfire, and it was I was very clear that I wasn't I wasn't able to evaluate my own risk.
Did you ever have moments where you say, I'm risking my own butt, but I really want to get this shot?
No, only after the fact, because in the moment, again, this sense of adrenaline, like when the bomb goes off in the film, I personally don't remember about 5 or so seconds after that happened. I only have the videotape that records where I went. Like, I don't remember getting out of the truck and going to this position. I just have this memory of the feeling of the blast wave. You could actually, when a bomb like that goes off, it's so loud, and you feel it as much as you hear it. And so being overwhelmed by this incredibly visceral sensation and then trying to keep one's hand steady, it becomes very, sort of compartmentalized. I'm doing this job. I must shoot this shot. And there's no way to think about both things at the same time.
And then your collaborator, Garrett, died a couple months ago, too young and very suddenly. What was it like to work with him?
Oh, it's such a hard one. To me, it was a great honor. I edited and co-wrote a film that he directed called Cul-de-Sac a few years ago, and this is our first project that we directed together. And because he was such both a dear friend of mine and a collaborator, it's hard to separate out the two. But I learned so much from him, and a man of incredible integrity, and with a rare and sharp mind that was a beautiful thing to see. And I feel blessed to have been able to work with him and hope that the things I've learned I can carry on.
And what is next for you?
I'm trying to decide. Christian Parenti and I are speaking about a project in Afghanistan, maybe going in the fall, but I'm trying to take this time to reevaluate and see what's important to do next.